since they got all the dollar bills from the ladies, get your dollar bills out and we'll have it a little later on. Yes, I'm not a glum lot. I promised everybody that I would be short and brief, and before I say prayer for God, you know, I always have a joke to tell before, you know, because 132, we are not a glum lot. So my father told me this joke years and years ago. This kid, he was 16, 17 years old, and he wanted to get a car. He went to his father, and he said, you know, Dad, I really like to get a car, you know. And your father said, well, there's three things that's going on, and, you know. I heard in school you're not doing real good in school. And your mom says you're kind of disrespectful to her too. And he said, and your hair is long. We've already talked about that. So a month or so went by, and he went back to his father, and he said, Dad, he said, can I get a car? He said, well, you know, son, I checked up on you. He said, you're doing excellent in school. And your mom tells me you're obeying her again. He said, yep. He said, but you didn't get your hair cut. He says, so, well, Dad, you know, I thought about that, you know. And he said, you know, God, Dad, Moses had long hair. He said, yes, he did, you know. He said, Dad, you know, John the Baptist had long hair. She said, yes, he did. He said, and Dad, you know, even Jesus had long hair. And his dad looked at him and said, yep. And they walked everywhere they went. I thought it was cute. So so I don't think he got a car. But I am a grateful recovering alcoholic and addict. And a lot of people know a lot about my story. So about my service work and all that stuff, I'm not going to get into that. But I'm a service junkie. So the bottom line of it is, you know, I did what I needed to do. But a lot of people, what I didn't know, God was showing me a lot of things along the way. And it took me a long time to put those things together. But the bottom line of it is, you know, I got 32 years, 1 month, and 21 days. And in that period of time, I'm supposed to tell you what happened and what it was like and what it's like for me now. In the third grade, when I went to school, we had a thing called the shoe fund, okay? So those were for kids who couldn't afford shoes. They would measure your feet, and they would give you some shoes. Well, when I started school, my family was, we weren't rich, we weren't poor. You know, September came, I had a pair of school shoes, a pair of tennis shoes, and a pair of church shoes, okay? But I went to school, and I found out about the shoe fund, you know? And I said, now I think about it, I don't know what I thought about, but I had these old brown shoes that the bottom, we had real leather shoes back in them days, and the flap was doing like that. So I got some rubber bands and put them around my shoe, you know, and I would go out of the door with my new shoes on, school shoes, and throw them in the bushes behind our garage and put these shoes on, and I'd wear them to school, you know. They took and they measured my feet and everything like that. And I was like, yes, I'm getting another pair of shoes. I mean, this is in September. We started the Tuesday after Labor Day. This was the end of September. I'm getting another pair of shoes. I have no idea why I did that. But in my mind somewhere, I guess it was, I was going to have another pair of shoes. In other words, I was going to have more than my two brothers, more than my little sister, I was going to have another pair of shoes. So, but I had no idea. I thought they were going to take the shoes off in school, give me the new shoes and stuff like that. And Joe, happy, as Kelsey would say, happy Joe is free. I'd be gone. So the one afternoon, early evening, there was a knock on the door. And I looked out and I was like, that's my third grade teacher. And that's the principal behind her. And there goes my mother to the door to let him in. She, hi, Miss Barton, how you doing? Bloom, 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 and everything like that. She, my mother, I'm doing good. She said, well, you know, we noticed these shoes Spencer had on, you know, and I'm going like, oh, this is not what I thought was going to happen. My mother said, my father, he's laying on the couch asleep, and he hears the whole conversation. My mother said, well, there just got to be a mistake. She said, Spencer has 3 pair of brand new shoes. She said, well, he wears these brown shoes with these rubber bands all around them, you know. My father looked at me and said, boy, where's the shoes at? They're out in the bushes. So my mother invites him in. So I go get, she tells me to go get my shoes. She said, these are not the shoes he wears. I go out and get the shoes out of the bushes. I'm in the 3rd grade. And boom, you know. She said, well, there was the shoes. So I didn't get the shoes. But my mother and father was like, why did you do that? You know. Then when I learned about in recovery, our problem is we want more and more. I guess I just wanted to have another pair of shoes or whatever, you know. But I played games in the 3rd grade. My life, you know, we had my mom and pops, we had cars, they had 2 cars, we had a house, we had everything. I'm not from a dysfunctional family. I think the only thing, I was just a little different. Because I heard my father say something that later on in life, I heard it a lot, you know. It was like, you know, that's your son, you know. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's okay, you know. But then it went on, you know. Back in my day, you had to be home when the street lights came home. You had to be on the front porch or the back porch. Simple as that. Front porch, back porch, you know. You think that after the lights came on, you'd figure out that the street lights all came on at the same time. I would be somewhere else where I wasn't supposed to be at, you know, and I would take off running. And by the time I got home, so of course, the street lights was on. And I jump on the front porch and I'd be, and my brothers, both my 2 brother, older brothers, they'd be sitting there like, you know, they like, And the first thing out of my mouth, I said, is daddy home? And they'd look at each other. I guess they decided who's going to say what. He said, the one would say, yeah, he's home, you know, daddy lives here. And the other one would say, yeah, that's his car right there in front of the house. And oh yeah, he said, when you get here, come in the house. You think after about at least 2 or 3 times, you know, I bet I did that about 10 times that I thought I could outrun. You know what he says? We do the same thing over and over again, get the same results, you know. And I heard that same thing again. I think after like the 8th time, my father said, I ain't whooping his ass. That's your son, you know. Damn, you know. Then my brothers used to tell me, you know, you were adopted, you know. I'm like, I'd go to my mom. I said, Mom, I wasn't adopted. Was it? Who said? Who told you that? Charles and Dwayne, you know. They said that. And the bottom line of it is, you know, I just did things over and over. Got it to them. My father was just like, you know, hey, what's going on? High school. I want to say something. I heard the guy told a story last night. He did a great job on the steps, too. I wanted to say that to him. But the bottom line of it was, I didn't get high in high school. I didn't get high in junior high school. I didn't get high in elementary. Where I came from, sports was it. You played football, baseball, basketball. You know, that was it. And so that's all we did. You know, it was one of those sports that, that's what we did. If you couldn't get on the basketball court, you played football. If you couldn't get on the football field, you played baseball. I played all of them. But when I got in high school, I said, I'm just going to do football. So I didn't drink anything. Now, you know, I might have, as a kid, I thought about it. I might have, you know, grabbed a beer bottle, you know, and did that. But it wasn't for the fact. I think what it was, you know, they wasn't looking, so I was just going to sneak. Because I'd sneak, take off. You know, I wasn't, it wasn't, as the book says, it wasn't for the effect. It was just, I was just doing something that was a little different, you know. You know, I was getting away with stuff, you know, because I would do stuff, you know, like I'd look at my brothers and stuff like that, and, you know, they was like, I don't know how many times I saw my 2 older brothers go like this here. You know, it didn't bother me because I thought I was different. The old timer told me I just tick a little different. You know, I found that out later on. And I was in high school. I didn't apply myself, but I was a football star. So, and I had 3 of my coaches was my teachers, and the other one was, she was the head of the cheerleaders, you know. So we called her Miss Rose, she was Miss Peppy. But I had one teacher who was my Spanish teacher. And I didn't have no name. And she said to me, junior high school was on, and she said to me, I didn't have no name, so they made up a name. My name was Espenserio. You know, I found out later, there's no name in Spanish for Spencer. So I was Espenserio. She came to me and she said, you know, Espenserio, you're not going to be able to play football unless you pass these tests, you know. So I had to ace Spanish history. And you know how we deep down and go get it? Not only did I ace it, ace A+. I ended up with a D3, you know, if y'all don't know what D3s is, you know, D3 is next. It's kind of like the next one is F1, you know, so I got D3s, you know, but I got out of that, you know. But in the 11th grade, because my whole thing was I liked sports, but I also liked the wild side, you know. We call them the good girls and the bad girls. And then the good guys and the bad guys. But some of the bad guys that I hung around with, they were pretty good. They were athletes, you know, but they just were bad guys. So in the 11th grade, I got in a car, a brand new car that I knew was stolen. And me, two wrestlers, and myself, and the two guys in the front two, been in and out of, we call it a boys' industrial school, all their life. You know, they stole the car. The ride lasted about 10 minutes, you know. You know, when you got five little black boys in a brand new 68 or 69 Chevrolet, you know, I don't think Bob Chevrolet's really appreciated us borrowing their car that evening. It lasted about 10 minutes. They stopped us, took us to jail. So we're in there. They already saw our record. They knew, boom, boom, boom. My grandfather was a battalion chief of the fire department. So my mother, of course, when they found out, you know, we got your sons down here, we just need you to come get him. She called him. So my father, my mother, and my grandfather, who was battalion chief, they came and got us. We got out. I got no record. Boom, boom, boom. So we're walking down the street, and all of a sudden, pow! My daddy hits me in the back of the head. I was like, damn! You know, I'm like, my father had Popeye arms. You know, he was just, you know. So in about 6 or 7 steps later, pow! Hit me again. My mother said, Barton, she said, you're going to knock his brains out. My father just stopped and said, Gray, do you know where we just got your son at? We just got him out the police department. He has no brains, you know. So that was my story. That's the only time that I was behind the other side of the law. I got away with everything. I never got high. I knew what happened with my thing. So I was going to go to a junior college in Iowa called Waldorf. And then from there, I was hoping that I had been in contact with the greatest university in America. I know we're in Wisconsin. I know we're in Illinois and all that. You know, if you saw me yesterday, I came up here with a diehard Buckeye fan. Can't stand them. Never have, never will, you know. But the bottom line of it is, you know, they had looked at me. You know, I made all city, and so I was going there, but my grades weren't good enough. But I didn't do what I needed to do. So we're sitting around. There's three basketball players, one wrestler. There's 7 of us in there, so I must have been 3 football players. We was all talking about scholarships, going to college, and everything like that. And one guy pulled out a flat joint. Back in the 60s, of course, it came from Vietnam. So we smoked it, and it was the first time I ever done it. I was like, whoa. Shoot. And all them was talking about, come on, man, we're going to go to, I don't think it was Krispy Kreme, some donut place and stuff like that. And I was like, whoa, whoa. You know, they all got the munchies. And I was like, whoa. I was like, we can get donuts later. I said, can you get another one of those? They was like, aren't you high? Yeah. But can you get another one? You know, once again, I needed just a little bit more. So I didn't understand it. I understand today about my disease and stuff like that. So instead of marching off to college, because my father he was on my resentment list when I was doing my resentments, you know. But it wasn't his thing. After I'd done it, I was like, damn. I mean, my father told me a story about the birds and the bees, you know, about girls and everything else, you know. But my brothers had the good girls, I had the good girls and the bad girls, And the bottom line of it is, I took a good girl and made her a bad girl. And before I left high school, I had a son. So I thought, my mother and father and her mother and father, they always talk about education. They was going to let me go off to junior college and do my thing. My father said, you made that baby. It's time for you to go to work. I was like, huh? Everybody went to college. Everybody except for the criminals. They all went to jail and stuff like that. But they was my boys. And all the people that I grew up with, on my street and within my block, my neighborhood, I had. And then it got a little bigger. I had four guys that played in the NBA. I had three guys that played in the NFL. And three of them was my best friends, growing up, I graduated June 9th. I started working June 12th. I got married. I can never remember the day, and she won't tell me. June 27th or 28th, and I started off the work. Unbelievable. I just, it didn't crush me right then, because when I got the job, I was making good money, boom, boom, boom. It didn't crush me, but then it crushed me like the next year or 2 years later when people who used to carry my helmet to the locker room for me and stuff like that, they didn't get autographs, but, they were in college. They were playing football. Then it hit me. But my brother came home that summer that I graduated, and, now I'm smoking a little herb now, and he says to me, I like to buy some of that. He says to me, don't buy a bag. He said, buy enough that she'll pay for it, or he'll pay for it, or they'll pay for it. I was like, I'm going to make them pay for my weed. He says, So I split it a half a pound with him. And back then we had nickels, dimes, three-finger lids, half a lids, like that, And it was good. It was good stuff, My wife told me, I never forget it. She says, I know you got little eyes. She said, but you always look sleepy. I said, I am sleepy, baby, But I went to my brother, because now he's in college and he's getting money to go back to college and stuff like that. But I got a job. So he says to me, I said, hey, man, can you get some more of that? Probably a week, maybe a week and a half, 2 weeks, It's a true story. He said, you sold that already? I said, well, not exactly. I said, I sold a couple nickels. I sold a couple dimes. I did sell a lid, And I think I sold a half a lid. He said, where's the rest of it? I smoked it. But I got money. Come on, let's re-up. Once again, I should have knew something was wrong then. But it never dawned on me. So my life was just absolutely crazy. Just the bottom line of it is, I was one of those dope dealers. That's what I was, putting poison in the street, that went to the mountaintop and slid down damn near as fast as I could. I sold all my things in my addiction. I always remember being in Chicago. I didn't know what Cabrini, because of Cabrini Greens. I'm in Cabrini Greens, all right? At that time, Cabrini Green and the one in Brooklyn, is Brooklyn, the projects in New York, whatever it was. Which are two worst projects in there. I'm in Cabrini Greens, nodding out, slobbering down my face, pocket full of money, because I sold, we called them Qualus back in the days. Some of you called them Sopers, Qualus. I was the Soper dealer, I went from weed to Soper, and later on it went to cocaine, and the story was over. But the bottom line of it is, it's like these people had robbed it was a jewelry store or a pawn shop or something like that. They was back in the room. I'm nodding out in there, and I finally came to, and she said, are you ready to go? I said, yeah, I'm ready to go. I said, they want to ask you something. I said, you want to buy a ring or stuff like that? I got a pocket full of money. I'm like, no. And so when we got out in the car, she said, well, they just hit a jewelry store. I couldn't remember. I'm like, damn. I found out later on what Cabrini Greens was. you know, Stevie Wonder song, you know, hey buddy, can I hold this for me, you know, like that. I would have been in there with a pocket full of money. They had knocked the door down. There wasn't no excuse. I would have went to jail. You know, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Is that what you think things would go okay? I was in Indianapolis, Indiana, you know, selling my soapers. And the guy came in, and you know, I said, you know, buying some from him. And the guy came in, and, you know, I thought you said you had 5,000. You know, got that flashy side of me, you know, boom, boom, boom. I said, man, I got plenty of cash, you know. But sex also was a problem, you know. So we had two rooms. So there was three of us. So whoever catches, they get the single room, and the other two get to sleep in the other room. But the one guy looked out the window. These cats coming out of a van. About seven of them. So we go in the other room. So now I think I'm a gangster. I carried two guns, one under my arm, and one in my boot, you know, because now the wild side hadn't caught up to me, you know, and the football side caught up in me, you know. That was my life. I was a third man. A third of my time, I played semi-pro football. I worked out hard. The other third time at a time, you know, I was a dope dealer. The other third of the time, I was the family man. Or should I say, I was the man at the house. But as the book said, I couldn't tell the truth from the false. The bottom line of it was like, my kids had a father. My wife had a husband. I put my kids in private school. My wife, I got her a car. We bought a house and everything. They had everything. The only thing they didn't have, my wife didn't have a husband. My kids didn't have a father. Because I knew the rules. You couldn't have your dope at the house where you lay your head at. So it was someplace else. That means I had to go someplace else. So third of the time I was there, you know, I got to go. Boom. I go practice my football stuff, work out, boom, 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 and hit the streets. That was my life, you know. But it just evaporated just like boom, boom, boom. But I thought I was doing okay, you know, because when we bought the house, we had $1,800 in the bank, and they wanted $5,000 deposit. And my wife said, why are we going down here? We don't have $5,000. And I said, well, I said, just go down there, you know. Because you've seen the guys, you know, the dogs out there with that dog house on it and their money in the ground and stuff like that. You know, I said, shit, that's a good idea. I had me a German shepherd. His name was Baron. He'd eat your ass alive if you came in our yard. So I got me a big shovel one night, got a big rock, put my money down in there, put it on there. I pat Baron on the head. I said, if anybody come in here, boy, you know what to do, don't you? And he kind of looked at me and was like, I got you, Daddy. I got you. Nobody gets in the rock but you, you know. So I go out. We go to this place. I told her, just go ahead and get a check. I'll meet you there. So you think I'd go get the money, go to do the same thing she did, go get a check. Nope. I had to get high before I went down there. I took one of them Qualus. So I didn't know how long this shit was going to happen. I didn't know how long it was going to happen. How long this thing was going to happen. I thought it was going to be 15, 20 minutes, sign some paper, 5,000, out the door. They come there, had these paperwork, and I was like, and all of a sudden the tingling started hitting me. I'm like, oh, shit. You know, I didn't go get the cash. I had them rolled up. And, you know, back in them days, everything had to be rolled up in hundreds, you know. I even had $101 bills. So now it hit me. So they're doing all this talking because now here comes the fun part. So I take the money, take it out the bag, drop it on the table, and my wife looks at me and she's like, she didn't say nothing. I'm like, but now I'm tore up, you know. I'm clobbering. I'm, you know, and the bottom line of it is boom, boom, boom. They started counting the money. Now it's really kicking on me. So I noticed how I was talking. Is there anything I need to sign? She said, well, your wife and you got to sign this right here. What I got to sign? You know, so I signed it. I said, this is my wife. She can take care of everything. I got up, almost fell, got outside, got in my car. We got the house. You know, that woman didn't speak to me for 2 months. I never understood that. I was like, you got a house, fireplace, the kids, what's going on, you know? She wanted to know what was going on that day, you know. I was like the godfather, you know. I'm going to let you ask about my business one time. That's it. You know, she said, what was wrong? I was sick. You know, that was the end of that conversation. But that's the way my life was. You know, I ended up getting a divorce. You know, I had three beautiful kids. My wife had nothing to do with it. Now I'm full blown, you know. Now cocaine is introduced to me, you know. I did a little cocaine when I was playing football. But I was like, duh, I'd rather do a little speed. Because I tell people nowadays, I say, I did everything. Everything that was available back in the 70s, 80s, I did it. I tried. I'd grab it out their hands. Oh, throw it down. I look at them and say, which way am I going? Am I going up? Am I going down? Is the walls going to melt? That's what's going to happen, you know. I was full blown. Cocaine, so a little cocaine. My brother told me something, and the brothers and sisters always get mad at me when I tell this story, but this is what he told me. He was my first sponsor, you know. He said, do you know a whole lot of people that you can sell this to? I said, well, I know a few people. He said, don't sell to no black people. I said, don't sell to no black people? Don't sell nothing to black people. I said, why? He said, they talk too much. I was like, damn. Cutting my brothers and sisters like that, you know. So I did what he said. I met some people, and that was it. Cocaine went to the two guys, the guy I knew him since high school. He was gay. He lived in a German village, which is very rich. Bought all the cocaine I had. Whatever it was, you know, if it was good, he'd buy it. You know, boom, 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 you know. I had another guy in Bexley, which is another suburb, you know, boom, boom, boom. I did it. And then the guy in Bexley told me, whatever you do, do not freebase. See, y'all call it crack, you know, I don't know. The crack came from the New York Police Department, you know, because they used to go in on 42nd Street before they cleaned it up, because I've been in New York. Before they cleaned it up, they go back and say, I hear you back there cracking, you know, because you made all that noise. And the bottom line of it was, you know, it was like, I said, okay, you know, I was just a snorter. And then some guy, he said, man, is that good cocaine? I said, oh, shit, this is a whip, you know. He took it and took a test tube out that had the water, and he dropped it in, and I was like, huh? What? Man, I said, that's Peruvian flake, man. I said, yeah, it is. I said, yeah. I said, what are you doing? You know, so he cooked it up, boom, 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 ting, 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 you know. Whoo, whoo, whoo. Your next thing you know, because, see, I hear people talk about smoking for 20 years and 15 years. My shit lasted about 18 months. I was done. It was like, the feds was trying to get me for interstate transportation because I'd met these Cubans. Then I met some people out in Santa Barbara. So my shit was coming in, and I didn't know that the one runner got busted. Boom, 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 and that was it. Because I'll never forget the story was, Carlos said, Spencer, if you come to Miami, it'd be a lot cheaper, and quality is good, you know. I said, well, okay. I knew Carlos 6 months. So I go to Miami. I get in my car, $20-some thousand, $25, whatever it was back in there. I go down there, got my gun in my boot. Carlos said, oh, Spencer, we do not need the guns, you know. Uh-huh. I'm like, oh. I said, okay, Carlos, you know, so I'm like, okay. I took the gun out. And of course, Carlos knew me. He said he didn't want any boot. I'm like, okay. So, boom, boom, it'd be fine. So we go down, put it down and stuff like that. Then all of a sudden, I'm going to say exactly what I said. You know, I don't like cussing and stuff like that. I said, these motherfuckers is talking in Spanish. You know, all of a sudden, it's like, what are you doing? They said, you know, they got a machine or whatever. And I'm sitting there saying to myself, you're getting ready to die. There's a girl on the east side and a girl on the west side that know you came down here, but nobody else knows you here. They don't even know where you're at. They don't know what's going on. And I said to myself, and I was just kind of like, and I was like, huh, you know, and I'm like looking at Spencer, you want to test? So I'm testing it. And I'm so damn nervous, you know, I'm trying to be cool, you know. I'm so nervous, I'm going. Carlos says, Spencer, you don't have to shake it that much, you know. I wanted to say, I wanted to say, oh, now you're speaking Spanish. Now you're speaking English again. A few minutes ago, as you can see, I'm here. You know, so the bottom line of it is somehow the runner got busted. They didn't like coming to Ohio. The white guy that was getting it from him, and the feds, you know, God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I had a cousin that was a sergeant on the police force, and then I had a girlfriend, because now I'm not married anymore, but my girlfriend was in my car with me when I wrecked it and totaled my car, you know. Totaled my car, went through the windshield, them damn Koalus, boom, boom, boom. So the bottom line of it is, I took and had to. My friend was a Fed, one of them college guys that I grew up with. He was a little All-American basketball player. He became a Fed. He liked to get high, though. And then I had another guy called a professor. He was a professor at Ohio Wesleyan College. You know, these are the people, what's the name? Because the people that I, the criminal guys, you know, they all started going to jail, and I started losing them. So the bottom line of it is I still like that white, that wild side. I had a deuce and a quarter. I know for you people who know the deuce and a quarter, Buick is one of the four doors, triple white, big fat white wall tires. I remember my brother coming home saying to me, he said, you know, the police ain't even got to look for you. So you just drive down the street. They know something's going on, you know. So I cut my California curls off. I had a shag, you know. I cut it off, you know. Got rid of that car. Got a Monarch, nice little gray car and stuff like that. This was the car I was in when I totaled my car, went through the windshield, you know. Surgery. Tore my face up, surgery for 3 hours and 20 minutes, boom. Took 7 layers off the side of my leg to put my face back together, you know. The bottom line of it is you think a person would quit, you know. I had beef feeders. I was telling Brian, I had beef feeders in my car. I was drinking beef feeders going from Cincinnati to Columbus is 103 miles. I got to Vine Street, and I don't know what happened after that. I hit these barrels, whatever. That's the way it was. You'd think somebody would say, you know, you need to stop getting high. My finite mind said, I'm not drinking no more of that rot gut beef eaters ever again. But the sopers, they're staying, you know. I blamed it on the beef eaters. I ended up getting a divorce. Quick deeded the house. I thought I quick deeded. I gave her the house and everything. And I just wanted my child support to be. Now I got 3 kids. Because now I'm full-blown alcoholic addict. Getting high was my thing. But I was good in math, so I was able to keep my job. Through all this stuff that's going on, I kept my job. You know, I was one of them functioning addicts. I went to work. They said you had to be here at 7:30, get off at 4. I got there at 7:30, and I got off at 4. And in between 7:30 and 4, I kind of gave them an hour and a half worth of work. And that was it. One of them amends I had to make, but that was my livelihood, so I didn't do it. So my life just spiraled. The FBI started watching me. My FBI friend came down and asked me, you know, first of all, my cousin called me. And he says, Spencer, I need to talk to you, man, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, cousin, you know, boom, boom, boom. He was a sergeant. Big boy. He said, man, what in the hell are you doing? I said, excuse me? He said, you know, the city police department, unless you kill somebody, we have a hands-off policy on you. I had heard that he was watching. I said, no, man, I ain't doing nothing, you know. Then that girl that was in the car with me, she lived with this other chick. The other chick's husband was a police, and my white Cutlass that I had at the time was parked in front of his house. And she came and picked me. She dropped me off of work, and she picked me up. At this time, I'm living someplace else. And she said, he told me you can't park your car in front of his house. He said, I said, I don't know what's going on. But this is after the FBI agent told me what they were doing. This is after my cousin Jerome told me. So boom, boom, boom. Long story short, the feds started following me. I stopped stealing. I'm 35 years old. Yeah, 35 now. 35 years old. Boom, boom, boom. I can't go to jail. I'm not going to jail. So I went through about $18,000 in about 5 weeks, smoking, you know. The guy that in Bexley, I mean, this is one of them, thank God. The guy in Bexley, he worked at the electric company. He'd bring my stuff to the electric company. I'd buy it from him. I'd go home, you know. I'd stay in the house. That guy had his shirt on. You know, the guy that, you know, peeking out the window. You know, this time would be different. If you peeked out the window of my house, you know, up, the cocaine's gone. That's it. You're out. Get the hell out of here. The last week, end of my story, I got off of work on a Tuesday. I got 3 ounces of Peruvian flakes sent to me from Santa Barbara. The FBI agent was with me, and so was the professor. We started getting high Tuesday evening all the way around, 24-7. We had 7 pipes, and one cool off, smoke just keep on going, till Friday around 9, 10, 11 o'clock. I was supposed to pick up my kids that day. All of a sudden, I said, you know, I said, man, I got to go, man. I went out, you know, I've been smoking cocaine because I didn't, sex wasn't on my mind. Now, I've heard people say, you know, oh, sex, women, blah, blah, blah. No. When I was getting high, I was getting high. I didn't have no time for no sex, but now I wasn't getting high no more. So now sex jumped up, you know, and I'm like, the hell? So I went and got serviced, went someplace else, and then I blacked out. I'm going south on this one road on one side, on the east side of the town. When I came out, when I woke up from that blackout, I'm going north on the complete opposite town, going by this highway, this hospital called Riverside Hospital. My car, I ain't changing my story. The sign, it had a big blue sign, and I swear that sign was blinking. They told me it never blinked. September the 5th, 1986, that sign was blinking. I drove in there, and all I said before I left the house was, God, this has got to stop. So I guess God said, I guess my angel, I got an angel called Samuel, it's my angel. He probably looked at God and said, I think your boy's ready. He said, all right, put him, send him in there. I never heard of AA, CA, you know, none of them A's, NA, none of that crap. I never once in my entire getting high life that I ever want to stop until September the 5th, 1986. That was it. And then my journey started. Didn't do the right things. I chose my sponsor for the wrong reason. I mean, God had always put things in my life. I just didn't recognize it. My counselor went to school with my father. You know, he found out who I was. First of all, he kicked me out of his office. You know, you've all heard the Metropolitan. Like right now, I don't carry no wallet. I lost a wallet, you know, because I had an ass and I lost a wallet. So I never carry. I have a European clutch bag that I carry, okay? My grandkids and my kids, they say, Grandy, where's your man purse? I said, it is not a man purse. It is a European clutch bag. So I still got it. I still carry it. So the bottom line of it is, you know, I'm in there and everything like that, the lady wants me to read, fill out this paperwork. And I said, ma'am, I said, I've been getting high since Tuesday. You know, so now this is the 6th of September. I said, I'm not stupid or anything like that. I said, but I can't read this stuff. You know, I can see it, but I can see it. I got my name, my address, I got all that stuff on it. She said, well, do you have any insurance? And I said, yes, I do. I'm still working at AEP, the electric company. I patted my back pocket. I stuck my hand in there. I was more shocked than she was. I said, well, yes, I do. You know, gave it to her. Boom, boom, boom. Back in those days, you started treatment on Monday. This is Saturday morning. Guy left that morning. I got his bed. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Chose my sponsor for the wrong reason. I was going to say that. I chose my sponsor. He came pick me up. He had on these sweet ass shoes. Had a sweet pair of pants on and shirt and stuff. I was like, damn. Got outside, he had a 4-door cocoa brown Mercedes Benz. I got in the back seat and he had his wife there. She was blonde. I was like, damn, she's bad as hell. So we go to the meeting. He don't read nothing. It was a discussion meeting. He don't say nothing. He don't say anything at the meeting. I get back to we called it the Riverside Hilton. I get back and they said, well, Spencer, did you find a sponsor? I said, yeah, Jim. And so I get back in my room, you know, people's boom, 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 and there's things. The guy said, you really got a sponsor? I said, yeah, I want everything that motherfucker's got. I said, I want his car. I want his shoes. He might as well leave his wife in there. Boom, boom, boom. God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. He started Cocaine Anonymous in Franklin County. I still go to the same home group meeting Tuesday night at 6 o'clock Freebirds that I did. When I tell people I'm a CA baby, I'm a CA baby. I still go to that same meeting, okay? I chose him for the wrong reason. I'm getting ready to leave treatment, and I know Jim's. I know Jim and Hank. I said, go to meetings. I was getting ready to say, read the big book, and I said, get a sponsor. Don't drink. Get a home group. And he said, what's that? And Jim said, I said, read the big book, kind of like that. So I've got my bags and said, oh, yeah, and go to a meeting tonight. I'm going to the meeting tonight. So I'm leaving, getting ready to leave the room, and they both said, you're going to, you're leaving your big book. And I'm like, oh. I said, Jim, don't take this offense, you know, or nothing. I said, I'm patting on the book. I said, this book was written by two old white guys back in the 30s, you know. And then I pulled the, you know, I'm a product of the ghetto. I ain't in no ghetto. My mother and father didn't live in no ghetto. The neighborhood I went to, the high school I went to, there was four black families in that whole elementary school. Lived in the greatest neighborhood, boom, boom, boom. Mother and father had car. I wasn't a product of that. The only thing was the product was me, you know. So the bottom line of it is, they told me that's all it was. Because I had read a little bit of it in the book. You know, I started reading the doctor's opinion, you know, psychic change. I said, these motherfuckers, they want me to have an out-of-body experience. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what a psychic change meant. You know, restless, irritable, and discontent. I played defensive back for 4 or 5 years. I knew signals and stuff like that. You know, pitiful, incomprehension, demoralization. I didn't know what that stuff meant. You know, but as I got sober, I remember pitiful. I said, that's what my daddy used to call me. You pitiful, boy. You just pitiful. He said, I ain't wasting my hand on your butt no more, you know? You know, then restless, irritable. Then I remember when I couldn't get high, those things was on me. I just didn't know what they were. So when I got introduced to this stuff, and, you know, incomprehension, demoralization, you know, I'm a defensive back. I'm calling the plays. I didn't say, that wide receiver is, he's pitiful, incomprehensive, demoralization. I said, he might be demoralized. I didn't use those words. So my sponsor recognized that, so he got me one of them dictionaries. He said, you ain't got to know how to spell it. There it is right there. So that's what I did. I did everything he told me to do. He told me, now my new sponsor, he told me what to do, what not to do. He said, I know you like to dance, Spencer. I said, yeah, I like to dance. He said, what does it say in the book? It says in there something about a free man can go anywhere if I got a reason to be there. I was like, that's right. He said, if you're going to dance, go dance. He said, but I got a suggestion. He said, you got friends that you like. I said, yeah. He said, you go to the club by yourself. You don't take nobody with you. He said, because you pay $10 to get in the club, and it's going to hit you. One day, it's going to hit you while you're in there, and you're going to have to get the hell out of there. I'm like, okay. So I took his suggestions. You know, I said, well, man, who are you riding with, Spencer? I said, I'm by myself. I mean, you could have came by and got me, blah, blah. No. I'm in the bathroom. I got this woman at the bar because, like I said, I did have problems with those. God straightened those problems out, too. I'm in the bathroom. I done wined and dined this woman. I said, she's good and drunk. No, she's not drunk. I said, hi. I said, I'll be back. It's time for us to go. You know, I'm divorced and everything. I'm a single man. Because my sponsor told me to tell women that I was a bachelor. That's another story, too, you know. So I go in the bathroom, doing what I got to take care of my business. And all of a sudden, I'm chopping on the thing, you know. This brother was over there. And I told you, I didn't ever sell to no brothers. The brother was sitting over there chopping the stuff up and stuff like that. You know, I'm like, God damn, it's kind of bold. He looked at me and said, man, you want to hit this? I said, no, man, I don't do that. He said, oh, man. He said, I know this ain't as good as the stuff that you used to have. I said, I know what I said to myself. I said, I'm cool, brother. I ran out the bathroom, took $20 out of my pocket, threw it on the bar, and said, I'm out of here. That's enough for her drinks and stuff like that and some change. I got home. I called him. I said, Jim, this shit just happened. If he told me to go shit in the woods with no trees and nothing around there, I did everything that man told me to do. 6 months he told me. 6 months he told me what to do. I bring my book because, like I said, reading wasn't fundamental. But the bottom line of it, this is my second book. It's falling apart. But it's got my highlights, underlines, and stars, and all the things that I did. The highlight stuff, you know, is like boom, 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 you know. I remember the Joe and Charlie tape. Joe and Charlie said, if you see the squiggly lines, you know, it's the italics. He said, when you see the squiggly lines, that means that shit's important. So every squiggly line that's in this big book is highlighted with underlines on it and stars on the outside, you know. And I don't know. I left my original book in Vegas. I was at an AA. I was out there for a family reunion. I either left it in the AA club or I left it in the hotel. It broke my heart because I had my pictures when I was trustee of the regional, what's the name, you know. And I had a guy that knew Bill I met in Manitoba. He had signed it. And it broke my heart. Not, you know, my sponsor told me, so, well, I guess it was time for you to start over. I said, Jim, that's not the problem. I'll start over. I don't care. I said, but there was stuff in there, you know, pictures of people. This assembly picture, it was beautiful. I don't know who took the picture. You know, Harrison with Jay was in there. There was a bunch of people in there, you know. I think Brian might have been there, but because I think I was trustee at the time. And I was like, I got some stuff in there, man. But I just started over. So it's falling apart like it is now, you know. So I did the things that he told me to do, you know. God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Irritable, restless, incontinent. I felt that. I just didn't know what it was. Demoralization. I knew what pitiful was. Demoralization, you know. I was just a shell of a man, you know. But this program, Cocaine Anonymous. Now, I have an AA home group that I go to. You know, but the bottom line of it is, Cocaine Anonymous, the people that I met, and I'm telling you now, I say this whether I'm speaking, wherever I'm speaking at, I have never met any people like the people in the Midwest Regional. I've been to California, I've been all over, the people in the Midwest Region, you know, I don't say that, what's the name, but the people in the Midwest Region, when we came through, they knew the bylaws. They knew. They studied everything. You know, sometimes they used to sit there. I thought they used to sit there and say, yeah, you go ahead and mess up. You say the wrong thing. You know. And the bottom line of it is, you know, it's like we're just one happy family. And we're in Wisconsin. And I said I wasn't going to say it, but I'm going to say it anyway. First time I came here years and years ago, you know, I'm at the dance. And all these white girls up on the floor dancing. And I'm like, oh, damn. I mean, they're breaking it down. I mean, they could dance. They're playing black music. I mean, this is my history and stuff. I mean, they're getting down. Then the girls from Chicago come up, you know. They all out there, the girls from Chicago. And I'm sitting there, you know, I'm watching this stuff like this here. And I think I must have watched for about 45 minutes. And I said to myself, are you going to go grab one of these men and go dance? Or are you just going to sit here and watch them? And at the end of that, they turned the lights on and now I'm soaking wet and everything. Like, ah, turn the lights back on and stop making you. But the people I met were just unbelievable. The things that they did as service work. H&I meetings, everything. I still have 2 H&I commitments. You know, but my thing is, you know, I go in there, you know, I just found out some stuff that's just unbelievable. Coloring, you know, books and stuff like that's therapeutic. You know, when I came through, there wasn't no damn coloring books on the table. So when I go to my H&I meeting and stuff like that, you know, I told them, you know, I go in there, you know, and I said, you know, I do one, and one's at a Mary Havens estate-run thing, and then the other one is at a dual diagnosis place, you know, so you got the coloring books and stuff like that. And I said to myself, I said, I'm okay with that, you know, I'm okay. I go in and I say, now, I know you got your coloring books and stuff like that. I said, you know, but I said, but then it just hit me. The old school came out. I said, there'd be no damn coloring for the next hour. I said, whether you get what I say or you don't get what I say, that's the way they gave it to me. You know, they used to tell me, in our groups, you know, cotton, you know, take the cotton in your mouth, put it out, take it out of your ears and put it in your mouth. You know, they'd cut you off. You know, you go to talk. My sponsor told me, I had a year. I went to this big books meeting on Saturday morning. My sponsor told me, you cannot speak for a whole year. I said, a whole year? He said, you don't know nothing about that big book. We're working on it, boom, boom, boom. You cannot say nothing for a whole year. For 365 days, I never said a word. I listened, underlined, did everything. You know, I talked to him about stuff. But 366 days, I picked up the phone and said, Jim, it's been a year. Can I say something? He said, yes. You're a one-liner. I said, excuse me? You're a one-liner. No paragraphs. One line. I said, and it better not be no long sentence either. Period. That was it. You know, that was it. And the bottom line of it is that's what it was. That's what I did. I did everything they told me to do. I went to meetings, read the big book, prayed, got a sponsor, you know. And there's a saying in there where the guy says, he says, Herbert Spencer says, the only thing that can keep a man in everlasting ignorance is that's contentment prior to investigation. And that happened to me. I'm done. But that happened to me. You know, I used to hate broccoli. I used to hate broccoli. There was only one problem. I never ate broccoli. I never tried broccoli. When I tried broccoli, I eat raw broccoli today. Cooked broccoli, raw broccoli. Broccoli would, before you say this don't work, just give it a shot. I pass.
We all circle up and close up this meeting.